Good morning and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. So good to have you at the other end of the radio waves and also the email device, which you probably are attached to by the wrists and ankles, at least, and also the telephone line, too, 414-1234, the local number 800-926-8809. If it's long distance from you to Tallahassee, and Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. Well, over the past, gosh, it seems like months, and in fact, I think it has been. We have been holding a series of what we call political perspectives, highlighting the various political races in and around Tallahassee and Leon County, and not to the exclusion, certainly, of other political contests in the area, because we have such a massive signal for this radio station extending from Destin all on the west, all the way over on the east to Lake City. But we just flat out do not have the amount of time required to give equal coverage to each of the candidates within that massive area. So that is why, in response to numerous inquiries as to what we're doing, that we have focused on Tallahassee and Leon County for that. We started off with the sheriff's race coming off of the primary election and continued on through county and city commission races, also a congressional race. We had a state senate and a state house race, and now we wind up with the superintendent of schools for Leon County. The challenger for that, Sabrina Allen, we had scheduled to be on for the first part of the show, and then for the second half of the program, the incumbent, who is Jackie Pond. Still waiting for Ms. Allen to arrive, and in the interim, we have another very serious expert when it comes to education, our very own Lynn Hatter. Thanks for pinch hitting here,
Lynn. Good morning, Tom Flanagan. How are you?
Well, we are in an educational kind of mode today as we take a look at the superintendent of schools race, the longtime incumbent Jackie Pons, now being challenged by Sabrina Allen, who teaches over in the Gadsden County School District. She is an English teacher, I think, special ed. She has a number of bailiwicks under her educational purview, and she has been running a pretty aggressive campaign against the incumbent, who seems to have perhaps more resources when it comes to certainly cold, hard cash during the kickoff of his campaign fundraiser, I remember, which was at the Moon. You had some little-known people such as Charlie Crist, Alex Sink, and several other luminaries show up to personally deposit a check in hand of the aforementioned Mr. Pons.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, this is a very interesting race. There was a Tallahassee Voices survey that came out about a couple of weeks ago that actually ranked all of Tallahassee and Leon County public officials. And Superintendent Pons actually had the highest a name recognition, but also the highest favorability ranking in that survey. And so this race is, I guess, a bit unusual considering that the incumbent is essentially one of the most popular, you know, officials here in Leon County. And that's kind of made this race a bit different from some of the other ones that we've seen in the past going forward in this election cycle.
What do you think some of the, however, I don't want to say deficiencies, but on maybe some of the challenges for the incumbent that might be a liability in a campaign such as this, with the ever-changing landscape of education, transitioning from No Child Left Behind to President Obama's set of guidelines for education, the race to the top. Now we have Common Core curriculum that's going to be kicking in before too long. This kind of makes the whole educational situation a moving target, doesn't it?
Well, it really does. And Leon County, when you break it down, according to the Florida Department of Education statistics, is facing many of the same issues that other school districts are facing. We saw last year with the state writing exam, scores fell. Leon County, they fell across the state. They plummeted, actually. The writing test, I think about 20-some-odd percent of students passed it. That led to a statewide problem. Leon County is also still dealing with budget. Now, our county is a little bit different from others because we are still able to maintain a funding reserve. But still, you know, financing a district that has about 250,000 students in it is kind of difficult. And so we're still looking at many of the same issues that other districts have in common. So we, you know, as far as the district being able to navigate those things, it's a perennial problem.
And you've also had the ongoing challenge of budgetary considerations. We know for the past how many years now the Florida legislature has been pulling back on the amount of funding that goes from the state to the school districts. We've had adjustments in property tax revenue, which
well,
is the primary.
We've had school closures.
Yeah, exactly.
As well. I mean, we've closed, I think, three different schools within the last 5 years because of this. And those are all moves that have been highly controversial. I think about, you know, Bellevue, which I believe was one that really got a lot of community engagement in that process. So it's not been an easy process. In fact, it's been quite painful. And the school board and the superintendent have all had to make, you know, these kind of funding decisions.
There's been one thing that has perhaps set the Leon School District apart, which is the amount of community engagement that it has been able to accumulate, not only through its ongoing foundation, but also through various community partnerships to help the district do things that otherwise paid staff people probably would have had to have done. And we've seen a decrease in that number over the years.
Yeah, because as the economy has struggled, businesses, in order for them to stay afloat, have cut their budgets. A lot of that depends on, you know, giving. Donations are down. And you see this also with a lot of just general foundations and charities. They've all really kind of scaled back. Now, technically, we're out of a recession. But for a lot of people, it doesn't feel that way because our economy is not growing at the rate that we want it to. And so all of these kind of issues come together and they create the problems that we see today with respect to state funding, local funding, half-penny sales tax. It's up for renewal on the ballot to get more money into the schools. But, I mean, this is something that, you know, on the local side, there's really not much that can be done to generate more revenue for schools because a lot of it is being dealt with at the state level. And so the school districts are very frustrated because they have to rely on state lawmakers. And then you get into that whole overall funding battle because our state budget is made up of healthcare, education, and corrections. And those three big areas fight for the majority of the money that comes in.
You're listening to Perspectives on WFSU-FM, the political variety of perspectives as we wind up a couple of months of engagement with the various candidates for offices in and around Tallahassee and Leon County. Wrapping up today with the Leon Superintendent of Schools race. The challenger, Sabrina Allen, was scheduled to come in for the first half of the program, and we are still awaiting her arrival. Coming up halfway through, we will be switching gears, and the incumbent Superintendent of Schools, who is Jackie Pons, is scheduled to be here with us. In the interim, we have our own education specialist, WFSU-FM's own Lynn Hatter, who covers education and has now for the past, what, how many years?
Five, I believe. Let's see. You guys hired me in October of 2007, and
right.
I've managed to keep my job until now. So, and I'm trying to keep it for the future. So.
Yes, and happy anniversary too, Lynn, we might
say. Thank you.
Back here to this half-penny sales tax, though, that has been a real concern on the part of school district officials because the way that this current ballot is situated. By the way, folks, early voting begins this weekend here in Leon County, and expect to see, if you have not gotten your mail in from Supervisor of Elections, Ion Sancho, this humongous document, which is the ballot for this go-around, the longest one in Florida's history.
It's a bit massive, yes.
And there's the half-penny sales tax right
way
after
the
state constitutional amendments.
Yeah, a lot of the backers, we actually talked about this a little earlier this week. A lot of the backers of the half penny are really concerned. Let's rewind just a bit and just talk about a little bit about what this half penny sales tax goes toward. It goes to things like school construction money, infrastructure repairs, new AC units, probably technology like computers for the classroom. And the reason that this little pot of money is there is because, again, at the state level, funding is scarce. Now, it has been in place for the past, I think, about 8 years. And Leon County school officials want the public to renew this for another 15 years going forward. The placement of this thing on the ballot is raising a lot of concerns because it is at the bottom of – essentially, it's the very last thing you're going to vote on this ballot. It comes after all of the presidential race, the House races, the state races, the districts, everything, all of the amendments, and then you have the halfpenny referendum. And so their concern is that people are going to have what's called ballot fatigue and either get started voting no on everything or just leaving everything after the major races blank. This proposal needs 50% approval to pass. Now, you know, they want people – they're telling people to vote on the ballot. We talked to Steve Ufelder, who's heading up the Yes on the Penny campaign, and he said that he's telling people to vote from the bottom of the ballot up so that the half penny will be the first thing people see. So I guess the fate of the half penny referendum is essentially going to be up to voters to decide, and maybe they'll see the box and check yes or see the box and check no, but, you know, it is there.
It seems interesting, though, that in a society that values education ostensibly to the degree that we do, all political candidates saying we support more education and more rigorous standards and you know, better teachers and all this sort of thing, that essentially Leon County has to run what is in essence a huge bake sale in order to bring more money into the public school system in order to meet the obligations for not only operations but also, you know, capital and all of that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, but you also have, you know, a train of thought that says money itself is not everything. And so you look at this to say, how do you balance the needs of the classroom with the needs of a budget that is essentially pretty much limited in a set, you know, format? And so state governments and even local governments have always kind of dealt with these two issues side by side. And so, again, your budget is a function of, well, there goes our break music.
There goes our break music. And I believe we will be joined by the incumbent superintendent of schools for Leon County, Jackie Pons, when we return right here on Perspectives. Political Perspectives back on the air, concluding our run here in the run-up to the November 6th general election. Early voting getting underway this weekend, and the Leon County School Superintendent race is in focus today. 414-1234, the local number for Perspectives, 800-926-8809. If it's long distance, and Perspectives at WFSU.org is, of course, the email address. And we are now joined by the incumbent superintendent of schools for Leon County, Jackie Pons. Thank you for coming in.
It's great to be here, and it's been an honor to serve this community as superintendent. And I've been elected 2 terms in a row, and just want to thank all the voters for their trust in me and their trust in our system.
Well, in comparison to some of the earlier races that you had, the two earlier races, this one's been a little bit contentious. You actually picked up some opposition in the form of Ms. Allen, who has been unable to join us here today. But was that surprising? Because you do have, according to that Tallahassee Voices survey, the highest, I guess, name recognition among local voters and the highest approval rating, and yet you've got opposition.
Well, I always feel like it's good for people to run for office. I think we should encourage more individuals to get involved in the process. And I think anytime somebody runs for office, they deserve respect. And I'm a big believer in positive campaigning, you know, having a positive message, talking about your vision for the future, what you want to do. So I commend Ms. Allen for running. I think it's good. And I think more individuals in our community should run for public office. I like to see it.
Okay. Let's talk about I guess, an overview of the Jackie Pons administration here in the school district office over the past two terms. And if you could make a case for why that should continue, what do you consider to be the top things that you have done and would like to do going forward if you get another term?
How much time do I have? No, I'm just kidding. Now, it's just been an honor to serve as superintendent. If you look, I think when you're an incumbent, you have to run on your record. Every year that I've been superintendent, we've been a highly ranked district. You know, we were an A district five of the 6 years. This year, they changed the way they calculate the points, and they actually dropped us to a B. But at the same time, they gave us the high-performing rating that we've never had before, making us one of the highest-performing school districts in the entire state. So I'm pretty proud of that. And I think if you look at the times that we've been through, we've lost $111 million of revenue since 2007. We've kept our system strong, safe, high-performing. Don't let anybody tell you anything different than we have the best teachers in the state of Florida right here in Leon County. And anybody that tries to say that they're not the best, they're just wrong. And we're so fortunate to have the quality of classroom teachers that we do have. And our teachers have kept us strong through these difficult times. So I'm real proud of that. I'm also proud of what we've done with our graduation rates. If you look at them, and we're one of 23 minority-majority districts in the state. And when they rank the minority-majority districts in the state, we're number one as far as having the best graduation rates. If you look at what we've done with African-American males, that was a subgroup that we've spent a lot of time, a lot of programs with here in Leon County. In 2008, according to DOE statistics, I brought them over here with me today, only 49% of our African-American males were graduating then. Now we're up to almost 71%. So we've raised that, you know, almost 21 points in a course of three years. So I'm very proud of that, while the state average for African-American males is 64%. So we're now 7 points. Now, we still have work to do. You know, 71 is not good. We got to get it better. We got to keep improving. But it just shows that some of the investments that we've made in programs here in Leon County are paying off. I'm real proud of the way we've protected the fine arts programs. I think if you look, there's a lot of school districts that have eliminated art, music, and PE in the elementary school grades. I think that's a mistake. I think these are the type of programs that keep kids in school and encourage them to graduate. We've got to protect our fine arts programs. And I think we're really missing something by just talking about FCAT testing. What we need to be talking about is a well-rounded educational program. And that's what separates Leon County. You know, we have that, and I'm proud of that. And if you look at that and you compare that to other districts, our community gets it. You know, they're there to support that. Even though we've lost all this revenue, we have more business partners, more mentors, more volunteers than we've ever had. And I think that just shows how the community here in Tallahassee is focused on education and tied into our school system. So those are some of the things that I'm proud of. I'm also proud of what we've done with school safety. You know, when I ran for office 6 years ago, I said we're not only going to get technology in order to help with student achievement, we're going to use technology in order to make sure that we have a safer school system. I started the Raptor program when I was at Deer Lake Middle School, and the Raptor program is a program that when a parent visits the campus or a volunteer, they use their driver's license. It does a sexual offender, sexual predator check in all the other states within about 25 seconds. So our schools are safer now than they were when we first started. We also have a safety security monitoring system that monitors all of our schools 24/7. We have cameras on all our buses. We have cameras now going up on throughout our school system at every school. So if there's a safety situation, this has actually happened, I can look in my office at that school and decide when we're going to send buses in, when we're not. So we've also got a safer system too, and I think that's real important. And I'm proud of what we've done. I mean, I'm proud of the accomplishments. I think not only is this a great place to live, but when businesses come to town, they want to talk to the superintendent about what a high-quality school system that we have. I think being a superintendent, one of the things that's most important is your administrative experience. You know, I started my career at a private school as a social studies and physical education teacher. I moved on and started my career here in Leon County at Rickards High School, where I taught physical education. Then I moved up. I was a dean of students, an athletic director, an assistant principal. Then I went to Godbee as an assistant principal. went to Deer Lake Middle School, where I was principal there, principal of the year. Also, Deer Lake, while I was principal, was honored as one of 12 Blue Ribbon schools, one of the highest performing schools in the nation. And so I think that administrative experience is very important because we handle a $437 million budget. And that experience has helped me to prepare to be able to deal with those budgets and also to deal with some of the reductions that we've had.
Talking about Leon County School Superintendent race, the incumbent Jackie Ponce here with us. The challenger, Sabrina Allen, who was slated to be with us for the first part of the program, apparently was unable to show. We were awaiting her up until about 10 minutes ago. 414-1234 Perspectives. If you have a question or concern about education, because we have the incumbent superintendent of schools for Leon County, Jackie Ponce, here with us. And it's 800-926-8809, by the way, if it's long distance. Without question, one of the major responsibilities for any school superintendent related to what you were just talking about with the administrative bailiwick is using personnel in the most effective way possible. You did take a bit of a hit when you made some changes at the principal level for NIMS Middle School, for Lincoln, and also Leon, and moved those folks into administrative slots for the district. What was your thought process behind that?
Well, I think we had 18 different moves. And when we had 18 different moves, you're going to constantly have change. And when you're in a system, every 5 to 6 years, you're going to have different changes. And again, as we've gone through all the retirements, we had retirements to fill and we filled them. And what I'm about is building the strongest team throughout our district. And that's what I'm going to do as superintendent. I'll continue to do that. Not only great teachers, great administrators, but the people that actually run the district office are very, very important. And when we've gone through all these budget reductions and we've lost so many district positions, we have to, when somebody retires, we have to have quality individuals to come in there. And so that has been real important to our system. And I'm proud of the individuals we've got on our team. We built a strong team. And this team's going to help us get through whatever we face as the legislature comes back. And, you know, we're going through, again, another funding cycle. You know, the governor's just recently released his budget and his budget related to education. And we've got to be ready. Because even though you lose $111 million of revenue, your students show up on day one. They're there. And as a system, you have to be ready. And it takes a great team. You know, you've got to build these teams that are strong and hire individuals that can do several jobs. You no longer hire somebody to do one job. They're doing two or three jobs. So that's real, real important. And also keeping the focus on using your resources to improve student instruction, to make sure that you're doing that. Our teachers have been put up with so many changes in education from the legislature, and they've still done an outstanding job during these difficult times. So we have to make sure that we provide the professional development, the support, everything that they need in order to be successful. And that's real important for our system.
I know you can't do this in a popularity contest or, you know, a voting thing, but having talked to some parents, frankly, at Leon, they said, gosh, we wish that Jackie had just checked with us before he moved Rocky because he was, as you know, such, you know, a fixture at Leon High School.
Well, you had a lot of them that felt that way. I heard from the Rickards community about Michelle Gale, who had brought Rickards all the way to an A school, and Kay Collins at NIMS. These were all quality individuals. And when you have that as a superintendent, you have to make decisions based upon the leadership that you have, where you think they would fit your system. It's not about individual schools. It's about a school system.
Well, let's talk about something you just mentioned a moment ago, which is what's going on at the state level, because I noticed that, in fact, Lynn had left it over there. Governor Rick Scott today announced yet another of his concepts of improving education for the public schools, where now there will be a more career and collegiate-centered focus in schools. I haven't had a chance to really – it just came out this morning as I saw as he announced it. But any thoughts on that from
what
you know about?
Well, like you, I haven't had a chance to look at it closely. But if there's not an increase in educational funding, I've got a real concern, because every year we have automatic increases when you look at the cost of insurance, the costs that a lot of districts are having related to fuel costs. Fortunately, we're transitioning to CNG. We're going to get savings in that area of compressed natural gas. But you've got increases automatically with utilities, So if school districts are not getting an increase in their educational budget, it still makes it very, very difficult because, you know, even though $1 billion was put back in last year, we actually lost $1.3 billion. So the numbers still don't quite add up. So I would encourage the governor and the legislature, it's time that we really find a permanent funding source for public education and that we make sure that we invest in the future of our state, which is our children. I think it's the most important investment we can make as a state. Even if you're focusing on economic development and jobs, and we've got to make sure that we have the best school system in the state of Florida. And that's one of the reasons that I've asked our legislature and our state, I've written a piece on this, it's time to transition away from the FCAT. You know, we've been with the FCAT too long. In 2014, we're supposed to transition to the PARC, a new test. You know, I'm concerned that test won't be ready. So I think it's time we transition right now and go into a nationally norm type test that would give us a chance to evaluate our students, how they perform with other students in other states. And that way we could make those comparisons right now and also get away from the EOCs where if you pass a class all year long and then you take an end of course exam and you fail that end of course exam and the child doesn't get the credit. I think that's a real mistake. You know, if you want to count the EOC 60%, 50%, whatever number you want to come up with, I'm fine with that. But let's not make it an all or one, you know, all or nothing where you take that one test and you're retained on the basis of that. And I think that's something we need to work on at the legislative level and at the state board level.
Since the major funding source locally, though, is the property tax, and there are a couple of constitutional proposals out there right now that would give property tax breaks to first-time home buyers, families of first responders in the military and all that. I suspect that you're not favorably inclined towards those sorts of things.
Well, I think the problem with some of the amendments, there's some good things that are in these amendments. But if you look at the overall, you know, where's the other revenue going to come from? I think one of the issues that we get into is how are we going to fund education and where are the dollars going to come from? That's why I'm so supportive of the continuation of our half penny, because if we would not have had the half penny, you know, since 2002, we've had it for 10 years, our school system would not look like what it does today. And I just am very thankful to our Chamber of Commerce, our business community, for doing a thorough evaluation of our system. They had some very good words that they said, some very kind words about how we had run this system during these difficult times. And they're actually supporting the renewal of the half penny. And in a lot of cities around the state, it would be the opposite. You know, maybe they would be opposing it. So, again, I think it's a reflection on our community. They get it when it comes to education. They're supportive and they understand about how important it is to not only invest in the future of our system, but to protect our educational system while you can.
And certainly the placement of the halfpenny sales tax referendum on the ballot might have been improved somewhat.
Well, it is last on the ballot, and I think they've done a really good job of advertising to let people know. I heard you talking about it earlier as I was driving over here. Go to the end of the ballot, vote there, and then come back up. And we do know a lot of people will not follow the ballot all the way down. But I believe in this community, and I believe in the people here, and I believe they'll find it on the ballot. I really do. I think they're going to look for it. They're going to find it. And I believe we're going to pass it. You know, and I believe that because I see Republicans, Democrats, independents all coming together on this issue. They're coming together to support this. And in the time when you see so much partisanship, you know, where people are – you've got to be on one side or the other and all the rhetoric that you see with TV commercials. I'm just proud of our community that we've got Republicans, independents, and Democrats leading the way on this halfpenny initiative. It makes me proud to live here in Tallahassee.
Well, let's talk to a Tallahasseean here. I think Charles on line three. We can get him in before the break. Hi, Charles. Welcome. Hello, Charles. Let's see. Do we have Charles on line three or did he drop off? Okay. How about line two then? Don't have a name here, but we'll find out who it is. Hi, you're on Perspectives. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. It was my understanding that the voters of Florida approved the lottery to fund education, Bright Futures, etc. Have those funds been hijacked? Or are they not used for education. What's happening with that money?
Boy, that's a great question. Superintendent Pons, what do you think?
Great question, and thank you for it. I get this a lot. And the lottery funds are placed – what they did actually with the lottery funds, they placed them all into education, but they pulled out the general funds that would have been available. So it's not an add-on. It's just putting the dollars and keeping you at a consistent level. So the answer to your question is, yes, they're put into education. But if you look at educational funding since then, it's been decreased, and they've just removed general fund revenue, where in a lot of states when they do the lottery, they add that on to their educational budget for more enhancements and things like this. So that is part of the issue that we have with not having a permanent revenue source for public education. And I think it's something that we're seeing more and more different groups of individuals coming together on to try to encourage the legislature. Let's find a way that we can really invest in the future of our state. If you look at – there's two statistics I look at. One of them ranks us, I think, 48th in funding, and the other one like 44th. I just think we can do better than that in Florida. You know, I think we can lead the way on this. And again, I just hope that our legislature gets this and they really get involved in funding public education.
Well, as I recall, Superintendent, I'm old enough to remember when the lottery law passed, and all the proceeds were supposed to go into something called the Educational Enhancement Trust Fund. And now more than one half of lottery proceeds is eaten up by Bright Futures scholarships and does not go then to the K-12 public school system. So times change, and apparently so does the Educational Enhancement Trust Fund. 414-1234 for perspectives. Leon, Superintendent of Schools Jackie Pons is our guest right now, and it's 1-800-926-8809 if it's long distance. Back on Perspectives, the Leon County Superintendent of Schools race is our topic of concern today. And challenger Sabrina Allen, we will be talking to her at a later time. We'll give her an opportunity to make the case for her candidacy. But right now, for the remainder of the hour, we have the incumbent, who is Jackie Pons, as well as Amy, who is on line three, and she's here in Tallahassee. Hi, Amy. Welcome.
Hi. I am a speech pathologist, and my question is about caseload size in Leon County. It is not unusual at all in Leon County for speech pathologists to have as many as 120 kids on their caseload. And for a field that makes such a difference in children's futures in the way that they are able to present themselves as well as how they are able to perform in their academics, it's very hard to make a difference in a child's future when you have that many children. It's hard to even know their names, let alone their individual needs. And I wondered if you had any plans to make any changes to that situation.
Okay, Mr. Pons.
Amy, great question, and I assume I just want to thank you for your service. You're right on target, and the problem that we've had during these budget times is we talk about this as superintendents throughout the state. I think we've done a very good job of learning how to be chief financial officers, but doing that, we've stretched our people, and it's like stretching a rubber band. You stretch it a little bit, and the legislature says stretch it a little bit further, and you keep stretching it, but quality of service is definitely the most important thing we can provide. And when you have that many students and that many caseloads, it makes it very difficult. And I'll give you another example that's really close to my heart, guidance counselors. You know, sometimes we have guidance counselors that are working with 400 to 500 students, and they're just stretched. And there's not anything more important sometimes than having that interaction with students of encouragement and talking to them about issues they're having and how they can improve. And this is a perfect example of why school systems cannot afford these type of budget reductions that they've been given throughout the state. And you are right on target. I mean, an example is we gave a pay raise, I think, about 2 years ago, but it was a very small one, like 1%. And we've not given a lot of pay raises since I've been superintendent. And I think that's something that I'd like to see improve. But what we have done, which I think is very important and I am proud of, is we've not balanced our budget by reducing teachers' positions. There's one district in the state of Florida has lost 1,000 teaching positions. And I made a decision, and the school board did, and we have a great school board, that we were going to keep our people employed during these difficult times. But what you're talking about is something that we take to the legislature every day. You know, there is going to be long-term consequences from these type of budgets. And when you give people this amount, it's not that they're not doing everything they can. In fact, they're working harder than they've ever worked, but you're giving them more and more to do. It's very similar. We did the same thing at the district when we lost 60 positions. We started assigning people 2 and 3 jobs. And what you find out is they're working harder, but they're not as productive because they're trying to do too many things at one time. So you're right on target. It's an area that I would like to see us put additional funding in as it becomes available. But again, right now with these type of budgets, we're just going to have to wait and see. But thank you for the question.
Okay, we go next to Linda from operational to capital budgeting here. Hi, Linda. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hello there. I wanted to ask a question about the halfpenny sales tax, which is supposed to go to repair and maintenance of the physical plant, the buildings. I'm wondering why this expense can't be paid for through the regular budget, even if it means raising the millage a bit on property tax, on property.
Great question. We're now limited on what we can do related to millage. And in fact, once you're given that, there's you know what you can actually go out with is predetermined on that. The thing that the half penny does that is very, very important is that not only does it give you the help in your capital areas, but it actually helps you in your general fund too, because if you had an emergency repair that you had to do and you had dollars available to do that, then you wouldn't have to go into the general fund. The great thing about the half penny is that almost 30 to 33% of it is paid for by individuals that visit our community, going to a Florida A&M football game, Florida State football game, coming to Tallahassee for the legislature. So a lot of that revenue is paid by those individuals. And this is not a new tax. It's the continuation of what we currently have. So it's not like we're trying to add something on to that. And again, you know, I think it's last on the ballot, but I think it might be the most important item on the ballot that we have. And again, a tax like this, a sales tax, is spread throughout your community. And I feel like, again, that we've got a great opportunity to pass this. And I think one of the reasons why our school system is ahead of a lot of other school districts is because we had the source of revenue. A lot of districts did not have that, so it gave us an advantage, and I really thank the community for that.
What about the stipulation that now construction funds have to go to charter schools rather than to traditional public schools?
Well, all the PICO dollars are going to charter schools now. That was a source of funding that we used to get that we no longer get. And all that last year, the legislature gave every bit of that to the charter schools. The half penny goes to our public school system, and that's another reason why if we would not have had that during these times, you would have larger reductions. That's part of the $111 million we've lost. You can remember we used to have 2.0 mills is what we got, and that helped us with all our capital projects to repair air conditioning, roofs, build buildings. The legislature cut that down to 1.5 mills. So they already have cut that down. So we lost that millage and the ability to go out and get that millage. And that's why you're seeing districts around the state, they're in such difficult financial shape is because they don't have the revenue to fix their buildings. So now they've got to go into their general fund dollars in order. I mean, if you lose a roof or if you have to repair a roof, it's got to be repaired. So you have to go find the dollars for that. So that's why this vote is so important to our community. And it's one of the reasons why I've been so supportive of it, even when I'm on the ballot with it.
Right before the halfpenny sales tax, though, again, those constitutional amendments, and one of them would allow public money to go to religious institutions, and some say, no, 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 that would not be religious schools, but there are folks on the other side that say, yes, 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 it most certainly would. If it does, what would be the impact on traditional public education?
Well, that's one of the problems with some constitutional amendments is I think sometimes we don't calculate what is this going to cost our state and how are we going to pay for this? Because it's easy to say we're going to let dollars follow students here and there, but what happens to the dollars that the school systems need in order to operate? And I know the League of Women Voters, I think they're against most of the amendments is what I've heard. And that concerns me, not that they're against the amendments, but I hope people don't think vote against every one of the amendments, then our half penny comes at the end of all the amendments. But make sure you vote yes for that is what I hope. So at least look at it and give it consideration and at least find it on the ballot.
Let's go back to the phones. Charles been waiting on line two. Hi, Charles. Welcome to Perspectives.
Yeah, I just have a question about personnel expense. We know that education occurs in the classroom where the teachers are, and we all support our teachers. But what is the budget, personnel budget, what percentage of it goes for teacher salaries as opposed to administrative people, et cetera?
Great question. I'm going to try to answer it. I don't have my budget book in front of me, but I'll tell you this, which will help you understand. 82%. Approximately right around 82% of our budget all goes for personnel. That's everybody thrown into that. So when you see that talking about budgeting, that's why it's such a difficult process when you have to make budget reductions of around $111 million. And I can remember in 07 sitting – I have a great deputy superintendent, Marvin Henderson. Marvin spent many years as a high school principal, and he was a key leader for Bill Mumford's team when Bill was superintendent, who also Bill did a fantastic job. But when we were sitting there talking about, you know, how do you get there with $111 million? You know, what do you do? Where do you go first? And one of the things that we decided to do that we felt very strongly about is, again, we have the best teachers in the state of Florida. Our number one goal was to make sure we protected the classroom and that we kept teachers teaching. And that we didn't eliminate. And when they take up a large portion of your budget, that made it very difficult. So we had to go into other areas. And I remember sitting in there getting to the first $10 million and then getting to the next 10 and how difficult it was as we went through that. But again, I'm proud of that because we can't afford to lose our teachers. Our teachers, our board talked about it the other night, what we've gone through and the success that we have in our school system is directly related to what they're doing in the classroom every day. Don't let anybody try to tell you that there's not great teachers in all of our schools. Whether it's Title I schools, whether it's on the Northeast, it does not matter. They're great teachers, and they're doing the job every day. And as long as I'm superintendent, I'm going to tell that story to everybody because they are important. And I wished our state built up a system in there every year that they came up with a statewide teacher salary and that they funded it every year. And you know why they don't want to do that is because they don't want to be responsible for the budgeting on that. That's why they push it back down to us. But wouldn't it be simple if we came up with a system of paying our teachers statewide, and this is the number of years, this is the salary scale, and then the legislature just had to come up with the money every year? You know, I think that would be great, you know, and it would be something that would really show the value of how we feel about education and how important it is.
Well, related to that, there used to be, in any event, this great sucking sound to the north, if you will, as Leon County teachers or Florida teachers along the border would relocate to Georgia because there was a more competitive salary scale up there. What's the situation now?
It's still the same way. They can make additional dollars. I talked to teachers that have gone up there and have been able to get an increase in salary. And again, I think that's something as a state we have to look at. You know, where are our priorities? What do we think is important? And to me, this is another issue that brings Republicans, Democrats, Independents all together because they all depend on public education. Anybody that has a child in the system and wants a better opportunity for their child than maybe they've had depends on education, and that's the gate opener. So it's something that brings us together, and I think it's something that we can work on from a statewide level to invest in the future of our state. Invest in our children. And it's kind of the same philosophy I've used on our compressed natural gas. You know, we've converted 44 of our buses to CNG. We did it in a very difficult time period because of all the budgets. But we're now saving around $7,000 a bus on fuel savings during the course of a year. When you start multiplying 45, 50 buses by $7,000, that's a lot of revenue. And we did it through a public-private partnership in which we reached out to the business community. We had three groups apply, and one group ended up getting the bid for it, and they built the facility for us, and we're buying the compressed natural gas from it, so it's a win-win. 97% of this is in North America. It's something that I challenge our legislature. We ought to do it statewide. We ought to have the courage to lead on this. There's no excuse that we're not wiring our whole state with an alternative energy of compressed natural gas and quit this addiction to foreign fuel that we have for people that don't believe in America, and we have to go and negotiate with them on fuel costs. So I think it's something we can do as a state, not just in Leon County.
Try to get in at least another call or two here before we're forced to say adieu today. On line three, Valerie awaits. Hi, Valerie.
Hi. First off, I can say on compressed natural gas, the state does use that fuel. I know that's not my question, but the state is using that E85, all types of options of alternative fuels. So to my question, I am begging the superintendent to please, on those high school start times, not buck the trend of every study in the United States that shows high schoolers perform better with a later start time. Plus, we're dumping our teenagers out on the streets of Tallahassee at 1:50 in the afternoon for higher crime rates and higher pregnancy rates. Please change that start time.
Well, that was a major point of controversy when the district went to try to get a more organized start time here for the schools. But what about that early bird thing here for the high school?
She's right. There is some research that shows that kids will perform, you know, better at certain times during the day. Here's the issue you deal with. Everybody has a three-tier start system. We were about the only one in the state that had 23 different starting times. So you've got to go to three-tier, you know, in order to pay for it. With the budget reductions, you can't do it. So you got to decide who's going first. That's the issue. And Valerie's right. And some school districts have had elementary children on that, you know, early start time. You know, we felt very strongly we did not want elementary children out, you know, that time in the morning catching buses. You know, so we did decide to go with the high school first, you know, like that. And again, there is research to that. It would be nice if you could back it up some, you know, and it's something that we talk about each year in our retreat. We have some school board members that believe very strongly in what Valerie said, and there is some merit to it, and it's things that we listen and look at, and we're trying to be creative. It's just like the seventh period day. You know, I was the one as superintendent when I was first elected. I brought back the seventh period day. I believed in it. The state doesn't fund it. You know, it's an extra $4.5 to $5 million a year that we put in to give children the opportunity to have more choices to protect our fine arts program. When the budgets went, we had to make those tough decisions. I still believe just as strongly today as I did in the seventh period, and I'm looking at creative ways to give children the opportunity to take extra classes. We brought back the virtual as an option, having a virtual period for kids to get that seventh period if they wanted to, which I'm very proud of. But when it comes to the fine arts or remediation, that one-on-one with a teacher really can't be replaced. So I'm working on something creative with that and trying to come up with a way to give our children more choices. But again, I thank Valerie for that comment. I think there's some merit to it. It's something we're looking at and we'll continue to explore. And again, some of the ways we were able to solve these budget holes was listening to people. You know, I got some great ideas. You know, we have a community information where individuals from this community can email me. I've done community conversations throughout the city. When I go in there, there might be five people for a cup of coffee and there might be 200. And we talk about issues, and I've gotten some great ideas from parents because, just like Valerie, they care about our school system and their ideas bring value, and I thank her for it.
Well, let's see if we can get in Frank here very quickly. Frank, if you could, your question, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to say to Jackie, I think he's done an outstanding job with the less and less dollars each year that he's had to work with. But my question is, the FCAT, do you think that's in the foreseeable future with schools, or do you think you would go to another type of a testing, standardized testing thing? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. And real quick, if you could, Superintendent, please.
Frank, thanks for the question. I think it's time to transition away from the FCAT. It served its purpose. We need to go to a nationally normed test again. They're already available. As we move toward 2014, we're supposed to move toward PARC, Common Core Standards. And right now, we need to have the highest standards in the nation in Florida. I'm for that. But at the same time, we've got to leave the proficiency levels alone and let teachers get us over the bars, cut the red tape, let them make those decisions. Thanks, Frank.
The incumbent superintendent of schools for Leon County, Jackie Pons, and we will arrange to talk to challenger Sabrina Allen in the not-too-distant future. So please stay tuned for that. Thank you, Mr. Superintendent. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee, technical assistance by Taylor Cox, and Lydell Rawls on the phones and emails today. Thanks also to our production team from 4FSU, and you can watch this on the TV set at least five times between now and next week. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for joining us today on Perspectives, and we will catch you next week.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.